Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hey, y'all, I'm Issa Rae, and this is the first episode of Block Party, an Insecure podcast. It has been 10 years since the first season of Insecure, and to celebrate, I got with my friend, Prentice Penny, the showrunner and executive producer, to commemorate by telling the untold stories of Insecure. Now, we shot this a while ago, but we had so much fun doing it. We were like, we were onto something. So I present to you the very first episode of Block Party. Hello, welcome to our show. I am officially reunited with my man, the showrunner supreme, mentor, legend, icon, Prentice Penny. Many more adjectives.
That's pretty good. I'll take that. But
yeah,
I'll
you know, that. You deserve it. Yeah. We are reunited and yeah. We decided that we wanted to take people back. I've been getting a lot of questions since Insecure. Have you been getting hit up?
A ton, all the time.
And it's super flattering. People are like, give me a 6th season. Bring it back. Well, y'all ended it too soon. So, you know, we thought that we would kind of run it back and give people insight into the show, into some of the behind-the-scenes moments, inside the writer's room.
100%.
Give you stories, anecdotes, things like that about, you know, the, kind of the making of the show.
Yeah, and I think what was so fun is, obviously, like, the show was on HBO for a long time, but obviously it's gone on to OWN and it's gone on to Netflix. And so I was really surprised that so many more people are discovering it as if it's, like, a new thing. So it was like, oh, man, this feels like the right time where we could talk longer than the wind downs.
Yeah.
We could give people the hour long they're finally asking for.
There it is. We'll give you the hour long. You know, because wind downs, we talked a lot about the show, but we didn't get to like delve deep into it. And a lot of shit was cut out. So this is kind of going to be the raw in so many ways.
The real.
The real. Real as fuck.
Real as fuck.
What have you been up to since, what did you do like as soon as the show ended?
I drank a lot that night for sure. I don't know how it was for you, but it was weird going from something that was like our lives for since 2015. Like, I mean, really all encompassing, really. And then it's like, it's just over all the, I remember missing, it was so funny. I remember missing the stress of Jonathan Berry's emails.
What?
Because I always knew, like, with Jonathan, it's like, okay, we're working, right?
Jonathan
like,
Berry is my manager slash an EP on the show.
100%. And so, you know, Jonathan always sends these sort of, like, panicked emails.
Yes.
And so I remember just being like, wow, never get another, like, panicked text or panicked
That's
email.
Crazy.
And I just remember being like, because again, when you're making a show, what people don't know is like there's a constant barrage of emails from this department, that department, all over the place. And all of a sudden that just stops. And it is weird going from like a thing where you're like doing something every day to like, oh, now I'm just home now.
Yeah.
And like, what's next?
Yeah, it was ending the show itself, like stopping filming was devastating, but also a relief. Like, you know, I fronted the entire season. Like, can't wait for this shit to be over.
You sure was. You were talking all that shit.
Talking big shit. And literally, I think it was you and Yvonne were done at the same time.
Yeah, me and Yvonne.
That, I don't know that I've ever cried so much in my life. I was like on the way, like in the van going to set. And I was like, oh no. But we digress. We're going to get to the last season. This show, we want to like unpack episode by episode.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to take you in this episode specifically through the pilot and kind of the origin of Insecure, stories that you may not know.
On certain episodes, we'll bring on guests and obviously people who were actors in the show, people who were writers in the show. So it's really fun to see the show and those episodes from those perspectives. So I'm really excited as we'll have guests on, obviously, in the future.
And of course, we want to hear from you guys. If you have questions, we'll open it up so that we can hear from you. And if you're curious about any aspect of the show, we'll answer everything.
Yep.
Hey, Prentice, who's our sponsor this week?
This episode is sponsored by Blissey. So the other day, my wife put a silk pillowcase on my side of the bed. She didn't ask, just did it. So I woke up the next morning like, something is different. I looked in the mirror. My face wasn't doing that thing it usually does. You know the thing I'm talking about. The pillow lines and hieroglyphics, they were gone. Blissey is 100% pure mulberry silk. And look, I'll be honest, I didn't even know there was a difference between silk and satin before this, but apparently it matters a lot. Real silk is naturally cooling, it's gentle, and it's what dermatologists recommend. My skin looks better, my hair isn't doing whatever it was doing before, and it's fully machine washable, which honestly was my first question. Comes in over 100 colors, so you can be fancy and practical. I'm not going to pretend I went looking for a better pillowcase. This one found me. Shout out to my wife, all right. But now I'm that guy at the barbershop telling people about thread count and skin elasticity, and I have zero regrets. Over 3 million people have bought one. Vogue and Oprah Daily covered it, so apparently I'm late to this. But I'm here now. Because you're a listener, Blissey is offering 60 nights risk-free plus an additional 30% off when you shop at blissey.com/insecure. That's blissy.com/insecure. And use code INSECURE to get an additional 30% off. Your skin and hair will thank you. I think it's important to talk about sort of the genesis of Insecure and sort of like kind of laying the groundwork, I think, of why the show kind of hit the way. Just kind of taking people back to 2016 and 2015. And even when you were writing it, 2014, of like what was happening in the world and sort of like why we sort of feel like this show was necessary and sort of, you know, why it hit in a certain way.
Yeah, I mean, the show, a lot of people don't know, evolved. When I first pitched it, it was mostly about We Got Y'all. Mm-hmm. It was about the nonprofit world. And, you know, that's a show that I was initially writing with Larry. And then when Larry left to do the nightly show, Casey Bloys and Amy Gravitt expressed wanting to delve more into the Issa and Molly characters. Yeah. And, you know, Molly was based off of my best friend. It's no secret now. And I would always come into the meetings, like, talking about, like, she might have just texted me before the meeting and I might share it because I'd be laughing at a text. And they just loved hearing stories about her. And they were like, you know, what if the show was centered around them? And I was like, oh, I love the idea of that and making the workplace more background. And in the original pilot, there wasn't a Lawrence, and I added the Lawrence character. There was Daniel, but he was Donnell, but it turns out Donnell King didn't clear. R.I.P. Donnell King. He sounds fine, but Daniel King was fine too. And so that, I was also just like kind of writing about my life at the time, you know, like it was a younger version of me and experiences I had been through, but it was like very much true to life because every note that I was getting was just, it wasn't that it was inauthentic, but that it was just, to me, it felt like it wasn't HBO and it felt like HBO was looking for a very specific show. Sure, they had it in mind. And so, you know, after that, turning that draft and it was finally greenlit and then I had to find a new showrunner. Yeah. And during that time, this was Obama year. So I felt like the television industry was more open to like, we want to see black stuff. Black is so popular. Like, you know, Scandal was on the air and killing it at the time. Yeah.
But that was really one of the only ones, weirdly, I think.
Of black shows?
Kind of, because this was also post-writer strike. Because I remember being on Girlfriends in 08. And after the 08 strike, they canceled a lot of black shows. Mm-hmm. And The Game, I think, was the only one on. Really until Scandal kind of came back in like 2012, 2013. So you're right. It was the Obama years of like wanting like, hey, where are all the black people? I think Being Mary Jane was kind of maybe around that time.
Yeah, for sure. Being Mary Jane was also killing it. And so that was also my appeal. And HBO hadn't had like a black female led show since Number One Ladies Detective, which was starring Jill Scott. And that was short lived. And so I knew. I was like, people want this show. Like this. There hasn't been like a black lifestyle show like this since the early 2000s, since Girlfriends in this way where it's just kind of about friendship and shows.
And like day-to-day just life. Yeah. Like regular life, yep.
And when they decided they were going to make it, I had to find a showrunner.
So I can tell you from my side.
Yes, please.
So I remember hearing about you from my mom because we grew up in the same neighborhood, like View Parkish area, like Lemur Park, all that area. And I remember I was working on a show. I forget where it was, but you were like in LA Times magazine. It's like a little piece about you, I think.
New York. Wait, no, that hadn't come out yet.
LA Times magazine.
Yeah, okay. No, I don't even know what
it was. Okay, it was some piece where my mom you know, like when your mom is like, Prinny, there's this black girl who makes TV from, or a web series yes. from our neighborhood. And I was like, I don't know who this is, mom. And so.
Thanks, mom.
Yeah, thanks, mom. And I was like, I'm also working over here. I was like, oh, so that's when I first and your name was so specific. So I was like, oh, I won't forget that name. Mm. Fast forward to, I was on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and I was also at a time where, like, after all the black shows, I was working on all the white shows. Shout out to all the white showrunners that hired me. I love y'all because y'all helped pay for my black kids. But I was feeling alone a lot, similar to where Issa talks about working at We Got Y'all, and I'd be the only one. And I remember being like, I got to make a move, do something. And also, I just miss working with black people. Mm. And so when I saw the thing that Larry was leaving and it was, like, looking for a new showrunner, I, like, called my agent, who you went to college with.
Ashley Holland.
Ashley Holland. And she was like, here's the script. And I just fell in love with it. And I think all the reasons why you made all those changes, I think, is what resonated with me. It was like, here's a black woman, like, from my neighborhood, or at least the character certainly is, you know, growing up how I grew up, kind of trying to find her voice, uncomfortable a little bit in her own skin. And so for me, I just, like, all the things of, like, I had literally been asked, I think, what On Fleek was. And so to read it in the script, I was like, oh my God, this shit just happened to me in the writer's room. And so I was like, I gotta meet with her. I wrote you a letter.
And Lena told me about you too, Lena Waithe.
Yes.
Yes.
Shout out to Lena Waithe.
So you wrote me this letter, and it was, you know, like, exactly what you described. This, like, you identify with the experiences, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. I've never.
Also, who's this old nigga sending me a letter?
I didn't know you were old yet. I was like, oh, okay, let me look him up. And then I was on a book tour, I guess, at the time for Misadventures of an Awkward Black Girl, and I had a book signing at Esalen Books,
RIP Esalen. I know, man. God.
Like, all the, even watching that episode, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm like, so much shit is not so much there is, anymore. And then you showed up to my book signing, and we spoke outside for, like,
it was also mad close to the house.
Yeah, it was very easy for you to show. You could have walked.
I could have walked.
But it was still, like, a gesture.
Yeah.
And so you, like, after the book signing, we talked outside for, like, 20 minutes, and I was like, this dude seems cool. I really like him. It feels like we vibe. It feels like he gets it. And I admitted in the documentary that despite having been sent your materials, I was like, no, I'm good. I get it. He did the hustle. Like, what? We're good. Like, right. I don't need to do any more research.
Wait, can I admit something to you?
Yeah. Oh, no. I'm so scared.
I had never seen Awkward Black Girl. I know. I saw a clip. Here's what I saw. And I never told you this.
Respect.
But here's the
we're, like, both the same person.
We're both the same person. I was like, I met you. I said the script was great. So I already knew, like, the script was great. And I think there were two things. One, I really wasn't thinking about you acting in it. Even though I know you were acting in it, I was just like, the script is so good. And then I was like, oh, I should probably watch the thing. And so I was like, so I watched the first episode, the first clip when you're in the car.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's funny. And I was like, okay, cool, I'm going to go meet her. And it wasn't until I officially signed on that I was like, oh shit, can she act? I quit a full job at Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I didn't know this woman could act.
I begged
my whole future on just family. Like, she seemed cool. And I was like, but I also think I was scared to see more.
Yes.
Because I was like, fair. What if I see more? And I'm like, I'm kind of committing myself to this thing.
Yeah.
And I kind of just didn't want to know. I kind of was like, and I didn't know you could really act until auditions. And I had different benchmarks that I was like, while we made the pilot, when I knew the show was going to work. And I have little moments where I was like, oh. But I think I was just scared. I was like, I don't want to see too much.
And even, like, doing the auditions in front of me, because I had the same thing where I was just like, there's a fear of, like, liking someone and then disappointing them. And I never wanted to. And we were just so, we just had a great vibe and great rapport. And you were always super clear about, like, this is your show. And, you know, I want to make sure, like, this is your vision. Even moments when in the writer's room where I do tend to pull back and be like, oh, maybe it's too much me, or maybe it's too much this. And hearing that refrain, like, this is your show and it's about this character, then, like, this should be done, was almost like permission in a way. And yeah, there was the imposter syndrome, there was the doubt and all that, but like going into the audition process was scary as hell, because it's one thing judging people, but then I'm like, oh, my chemistry also determines whether or not they may be good. And we have to build off of each other, and I have to show up. So being on the other side of it was like, oh my gosh, I hope I'm not fucking them up.
I remember we had a conversation. We had a call, and we were looking at certain directors early on. And you were saying, like, I don't feel this director is right, blah, 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 right? Oh, and yes. I remember us having, and you're like, I want to say something. And I was like, no, don't. Sometimes these things kind of in themselves, and then you don't use your card for that, right? I think that was like our first kind of like problem-solving moment together, at least the early ones I remember. And I remember getting off the phone being like, can she act? I remember being like, and going through a real meltdown. I was in Las Vegas with my family for like spring break, and I was like, oh my God, I don't. And I still didn't look. I still never saw it till like much later. But I was just like, oh, I really have committed to this thing. It's hard to put a value on chemistry when you meet people, but I think it's real in relationships. It's obviously real in business and in friendships and in partnerships. So it really was like we just kind of hung a lot of it on like trust and chemistry.
But it was Chris Rock.
Yes.
Chris Rock was.
Yes.
Like HBO really wanted Chris Rock to direct.
Because he was fresh off Top Five.
He was fresh off Top Five. But he was based in New York, and I was very much like, this is a L.A. show.
Yep.
And they flew me out. It was my first time ever flying first class to go meet him. He was staying in, like, the Mandarin Hotel. And he was also, like, freshly going through a divorce.
Yep.
And, you know, I was initially excited about the prospect because I love Top Five. Obviously, Chris Rock is a legend. But when we met, there was, like, a couple things that were evident. And so I left. I spent the night in that luscious hotel, put on the robe and slippers, and just kind of like
held yourself.
Was emotional. Yes, like, oh no, they really want this, and I don't think he wants this, and he's ready for it right now. And so when I flew back, they were like,
also we can shoot in New York,
yes.
and fake LA
yes.
for New York,
yes.
fake New York for LA, which yes. is like you can't
yes.
do that.
He wanted to fake New York for LA. He was like, we'll shoot the exteriors in LA, but everything else can be in. And I was like, but. Their window, like, but I don't want to show off LA. Yeah. And what about exteriors? Went back to HBO. They were like, how did it go? He seemed like it went well. He's into it. And I was like, oh, man, great. And I was telling my managers, I was like, yeah, I don't think he's right. And then I talked to you. Yeah. And I was like, this just doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
And so ultimately, you said that brilliant thing where you were like, things have a way of working themselves out. And I was like, cool. And I remember I still called him, and it went to voicemail. And when I hung up, he had called me at
really?
The same time, left me a voicemail, and was like, hey, I'm going through a lot right now. You know, I just want to let you know, like, thank you for considering me for the pilot, but, like, I just can't do
right,
this.
Right.
And I was like, yeah! But yes, that was, like, the best. And then years later, after the show aired, was in Atlanta at a party, and Insecure was like in his second season, and I saw him. He looked great. He looked happy, and he was like, "Yo, Insecure is great." And I was like, "Oh man, thank you so much. That means a lot coming from you." And he was like, "I would have fucked your shit up." I was like, "Validation. Thank you so much, Chris. Thank you for admitting
that." Props for Chris to like admit that.
Yeah,
that's dope. You know what's funny about that story you just told, which I do think is specific to, I think, the way Black people sometimes have to move in this business versus our counterparts, which is sometimes when you're like you think you just have to kind of accept what they tell you.
Yeah.
And because you're so like, I got this opportunity, I don't want to mess it up. So even if I don't feel it's right, I'm kind of going along with something that I know kind of in my gut isn't right. But whereas sometimes our counterparts are like, no, I'm not doing that. And there's no blowback to it. But we have to think a lot of times, if I say this now, how is that? Am I going
to
come across
absolutely.
Like this? And you got to do all this math.
I have to pick my battles. Yeah. Yes, I have to decide like, okay, I'll accept this now so that maybe I'll be granted grace later to get this, you know, other. And you still operate like that. But when something is so clearly wrong, like you just have to speak up. And I was thinking like, you know, also at the time, Insecure was being compared to Girls before it even aired.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, there's the Judd Apatow-Lena relationship. And, you know, maybe that's what they're expecting here in the same way. And so we were all new. That was I think that
so
was
new.
Also the best part of it
yeah.
and something that really can't be replicated between me, you, and Melina. You know, first time showrunner, first time writer, star, first time TV director. Yeah. Like, we all wanted this shit super badly, and we desperately wanted it to succeed. And it showed. And there were a lot of raw emotions in that, too.
Yeah.
You know, there are... We didn't really argue that much, but I can't wait to have Melina on this show eventually.
Oh, my God. Shout out to Melina Cookie Lion. But one of the things, that, as we keep talking about, obviously, I think what's at the core of this, right, that I think attracted me and obviously attracted someone like Chris is just how strong the script was, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times I've read a lot of pilots, and I know you have too, where... You can kind of see, I kind of see what they're doing here, but a pirate is a lot to convey because you're setting up the show, the tone, the characters, the world, where is it going to go? So it's a lot to do in a short amount of time. What was the hardest thing about adapting a web series as you were thinking about it into a different kind of scripted show?
I didn't want to adapt it. It was so it was not, you never saw it, so you don't know. But now I know. But no, it was like, I was like, I don't want to make this. This is a completely different thing.
Right.
So like, I think for me, it was freeing to be like, oh, I'm just making a show from scratch. And, you know, the ABC pilot that I did for Shondaland.
And that was called I Hate
LA Dudes.
I Hate LA Dudes.
Like, that was, I'm so glad that that failed for a lot of reasons. But like, I just didn't really know what I wanted to say. And I feel like with Insecure, I started learning what I wanted to say. Or it was an untitled Issa Rae Project until whatever.
Yeah, I think until... Was it?
The table read is when I remember we'd come up with the title. No, I had written a title. I had come up with the title because I remember I was bouncing off of Vanessa, my publicist. And she was like, Insecure feels incomplete. And I was like, you hating on my title. And then after we did the first table read, Michael Lombardo was like, you know, when I see these two girls.
I remember that,
I don't think insecure. I think fierce. I think flawless. I think confident. I think beautiful black women. And I was like, that's the problem, respectfully. Yep. Like, we don't really get these opportunities to be flawed and to, like, I was like, I don't feel like a strong black woman. I feel like a weak black woman, you know?
Right,
and
I remember
these
that,
women get to be that on screen. Yep. There needs to be those portrayals. Black girl magic.
Right.
And it's like, no, we're human.
Yep.
And
black girl tragic.
And we want to showcase the tragedies that can be black women. So after that, he was like, okay, yeah, Insecure sounds right.
Yep. Yep. But do you remember... I think you, me, and Melina kind of had to arm up, I think, because they came at us and said, oh, they want to change the title. And I think we loved it by that point.
Yeah.
And I think we were like, okay, if they're going to say this, we got to be whatever.
That's so
and
funny.
I remember you said it, and then he just kind of like backed off it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And we were just like, oh, that was easy.
Yeah, all I have to do is defend my shit. And that is, like you said, it's such a scary thing to be like, because you also assume that they're experts, you know, and that they're coming from a place of knowledge. And at times, they are, and there's experience, but you also just have to have the backbone to, like, defend your shit.
Yeah. I will say that was the, I think, coming from network shows to HBO, it was a real breath of fresh air of just how they were so artist-friendly.
Absolutely.
For sure.
And Jonathan Barry used to always say this. Even when I was, like, when I finally told him, I was like, oh, me and Prentice want to end this after 5 seasons. He was like, why? Like, it's never like this. Every single time, he would always be like, I just want you to know, it's never like this. It's never like this at networks. It's never like this with the cast, the chemistry that you guys have, the freedom. And I'd be like, oh, we'll be good. But it's never like this.
He was right. As we found out.
He was absolutely right.
But I think, you know, I think the thing today was also funny about the 5 years. I remember, was this after we did the pilot or when we were doing the first season, when we both, you looked at me and you were like, how long do you want to do this?
I feel like it was for sure in the writer's room. It was a moment in the writer's
room. Okay, it was a moment. And I was like, well, how long do you want to do this? You said same time. And we both said five.
5 seasons.
We both said 5 seasons.
And I say that, like, I maintain... That was, my reasoning was for sure story, because we wanted to have an ending, but like, and it was definitely after the pilot, because I was like, we have the cast, we have you.
Yep.
I'm like, there's a point when, even business-wise, everybody's going to want to do their own thing. I've seen that on, as being a fan of countless shows, you always hear like, they wanted to branch off and do that, and there was cast, cast issues. They became enemies. And I was like, I don't want this. I love everybody so much. I want them to love working on this show and love coming to work.
Yep.
Four seasons feels like too short. Like, you know, five seasons is just like, oh, an extra year of college. We can do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I maintain that because by that last season, I was like, oh.
Yeah.
We need some time apart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Princess, who's our sponsor this week?
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And I know that sounds like something you scroll past, but I want to actually say something about it. It feels even more relevant as Issa and I revisit the very first season of Insecure. A lot of us, especially a lot of men, are walking around carrying a lot on our shoulders and saying, oh yeah, I'm fine. Things we're overthinking at 2 a.m. Decisions we keep second guessing. All the stuff we filed away under, I'll deal with that eventually. And eventually, just keeps moving. I've been around enough people, men especially, who think that handling everything alone is just what you do. That talking about what's actually going on is somehow a weakness. Somehow we are even praised and rewarded for being strong and silent. And I get it. I understand where that comes from. But I also know that nobody has all the answers by themselves. Not the most put together person in the room. Not you, not me. I know firsthand that having someone in your corner who can actually listen without an agenda, that's not a weakness. That's just smart. That's where BetterHelp comes in. It's the world's largest online therapy platform. Over 30,000 licensed therapists, more than 6 million people served, and a 4.9 out of 5 average rating from over 1.7 million real client reviews. That last number is the one that got me. That's not a company saying it works. That's millions of people saying it worked for them. I've used it too. You fill out a short questionnaire, they match you with a therapist, and if it's not working, you can switch. No explanation needed. So if you've been feeling overwhelmed, stuck, or even insecure about how to move forward, just know that it's more common than we let on. And this month is honestly a good time to check in with yourself and ask, do I have someone in my corner? You deserve that. We all do. You don't have to be on this journey alone. Find support and have someone with you in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/insecure. That's BETTERHELP.com/insecure.
One of the best moments, I think, in the script, obviously, and there's a lot of story, obviously, around that, is Broken Pussy.
What up, y'all?
You were like...
Oh, not your girl? No, like, that's your girl, right?
What the fuck?
Love Rookie. She give them all the cookies, but cookies on me pussy. This girl is kind of loosey. Dudes take her off the shelf and they put her on credit. 30 days later, they return it and regret it. Used like a dish rag, dumped with a hashtag. I blame it on the pussy. That shit must be bad. Broken pussy. Broken pussy. Maybe it's dry as hell. Maybe it really smells. Broken pussy.
Oh my God, she's talking about me. Maybe
it's really rough. And I never asked this. I was like, where did the broken pussy come from?
That came from, so Larry and I used to have a lot of conversations on his rooftop, and that literally came from something I said to my best friend at some point. You know,
really?
She was, I can't remember why she was out here.
You told Megan she had a broken pussy?
I told Megan she had a broken pussy. I asked her, like, what if your pussy broken? And we just started laughing. And Larry thought that was so funny. He was like, that, whatever she, I don't know what we're doing, but we are putting that in the script. And so that evolved into, like, her rapping about the broken pussy yep. on stage. And, you know, a lot of people don't know Larry wrote half those lyrics. So
really?
Shout out to him, yes.
Shout out to Larry Wilmore.
Yes. Used like a dish rag, dumped with a hashtag was.
Oh, Larry out here in the streets.
Larry done knew a couple broken pussies.
Larry done knows some broken pussies.
Yes, but I never thought that would be like, that's the first thing that people will say. I don't know. Like,
yeah, no,
like,
the broken pussy. Yeah, because I think it's like, I think the first time we see you and Mari together is in Mercado. Right?
Yeah.
In the thing. And so it's the first time we're meeting this sort of like what the love story is in the show, like the real love story. So it's like this thing that it's what it is. It's one of those things like you say to your friends how you organically did it that like people do. And it's like, you just remember it. And then obviously it comes back in the pilot at Maverick's flat. And obviously it plays out in the first season. But it's such a funny thing that we've all said something like that to our friends. And so I think it just connects because it is super organic.
Was there anything, like, even in reading the pilot? Because I remember you bringing in punch-up writers. And I was like, you know, this was all new to me.
Yeah.
So
I was like, great. We're just, people are just going to blend our jokes for free. Like for the pilot, we don't even have a writer's room yet. He was like, yeah, people do this all the time. And there was this one writer that she brought who was fucking hilarious. And everything that she picked.
Christy Korzick.
Was hilarious. She gave us so many alts for the Mavericks flat scene.
Yeah, she gave us he mad, but he good.
Yes, yes. I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah. And there was also like the, the Petey Pablo stuff.
The Petey I don't Pablo know if
that
stuff.
Was that? That might have been Yvonne's.
That might have been. Yvonne's, I think that was Yvonne. I think that was
Yvonne's improv. But was there anything generally where you were like, I don't know in this pilot if this is going to translate on screen?
I didn't think anything necessarily. I did think the voiceover, which is obviously, talk about that later, but the voiceover kind of stood out, I think, as the only thing. But I was like, okay, well, that's the show, and that's the, you know, obviously it was in the web series too. So it is like kind of taking pieces of the web thing that you felt works and not taking the other stuff that you, you know, as you said, how you wanted to change it. But it was a thing where it felt a little expositional, but it was like, okay, well, maybe that's just what this show, it didn't like uber stand out to me as like a thing, but it was like, that was the only thing that I thought. Everything else though, it was a super tight pilot, I thought.
Yeah, it's so interesting because the voiceover, I didn't want to add, and I was like, really? That was kind of a note because they kept on asking the same question of the why today. Like, that is a common pilot question, and you know, for many drafts it did not have a voiceover. But after getting that question, I was like, this feels like the only way to get this out. And I did it in the web series, and that was also another thing. I was like, I don't want people to compare the web series to the show, but ultimately that ended up being the best tool for like getting what they wanted across. And they were like, oh, okay, this is great. But then after the pilot, I was like, can we get rid of this shit? We don't need it. Yeah, we do not need this.
Now, obviously, you know, we talked about obviously how, you know, Megan's a lot of inspiration for Molly. And I'm curious, in the real world, was obviously another character besides like Laurent is Daniel. So as you were writing the script, what was the inspiration for Daniel? And was there a Daniel type in Issa Rae's life?
There was. I had a what if guy for sure. And that was, you know, initially in the first draft, Issa D wasn't in a relationship. Mm-hmm. And then once I added, you know, Laurence, that character, the what if guy was something that was very much true to like something that I experienced. Yep. Like, you make this specific decision, you commit to one person, and then there's that guy who's like, he got away. You know, he's bad for you, but you always wonder, like, what would have happened if we got together? And they're very different. Daniel King and my what if guy, very different people. It was very clear to me that this person was not the one for me, but there's still that allure.
Sure.
And to this day, the what if guy has never seen the show.
Really?
No. I'm like, you're like in the show, but I think he doesn't recognize it as himself.
He's like, I'm Laurence.
No, he doesn't. You're nothing. you're nothing to me right now.
And I think that's what, like, when you said, like, was there anything that stood out? I know you were asking that from, like, a negative space. But I think that is what, I think stuff like Daniel stood out to me in a positive space, right? And I think what, obviously, there's all the cool stuff in the script about, like, you and Molly's friendship. And obviously, like, the weirdness of being the one black person at this sort of all-white workspace, even if it's well-meaning. But the things that I really felt that I also connected to as a man.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. You're popular refrain.
I see that a lot, obviously, the real as a man. Was seeing a different portrayal of a black man in the show. Seeing, like, an insecure Laurence. Like, seeing a guy who's, like, kind of a regular guy, trying to figure it out, doesn't have it together, has his own insecurities, right? And I think, so that stood out to me. But also learning that women have what-if dudes. And, like, to see, because most of the things are, like, guys are players. Guys got, I got this chick, I got my side chick, whatever. But you never really see shows, I think, at least I hadn't up until that point, where women have their dude and they what-if, or they side dudes. Now it's, like, no big deal. Everybody talks about, I'm taking all these niggas for bags or whatever. But then it was, like, a big deal to see, like, oh, man, women move mad slick out here. All and right. I think that's what I think also resonates in the show is like, where I think a lot of men also had a hard time because a lot of dudes are Laurences.
And you know, I think even just having you be a part of the project and see Laurence in that way was obviously like series changing, you know, because in my mind, even though we cast JLS, we had probably talked about like Lawrence would continue.
Yep.
But in my mind, in writing the pilot, I was like, oh, she's clearly going to pursue this what if guy and we're going to go.
Yeah.
Like Lawrence is going to fall by the wayside. But when you cast someone as brilliant as JLS and see what he brings to the table, and then you, like, I was like, oh, you're seeing things in him that I didn't even think about, like, writing and working with you as a man, you know,
respect.
Like it, it opened my eyes to like, oh, there is a way that I write men,
yeah.
You know, and there is a way where I might write the idealized version of them.
Right.
I might write the insanely biased version of them. There's for sure a female lens in writing men. And so even throughout the series, which we'll discuss over time, like your perspective ended up being invaluable. And also, I would argue, like, attracted men to watching this show.
Right.
Because they saw themselves in this character that we developed with some of your experiences, with some of the writers' experiences. And it just made them whole. We made so many of our male characters like whole people in ways that men could identify with.
Yeah, I think it was really fun to see just... And I think, you know, Molly in the script obviously is presented, I think, the most Hollywood stereotypical of a black woman who's like, I'm a lawyer, I'm a this, I got my life to go, blah, blah, blah. But I think what's great about that is you get to see the flaws underneath all of that, right? Because typically if you were to do a show and the Molly character was in like that law firm show, she would be the sister who she's like the fourth lead, just like you'd kind of be like the fourth lead of We Got Y'all, feels like a network show. But and you would never see the cracks of a Molly, right? Because they're just kind of painting her with this broad brush. But I love what you did in the script, which you do get to see the insecurities of this character and what's in the and the and the paranoia and anxiety of this woman to kind of like have that part of her life together. You know, obviously, you know, Jay not necessarily being around for a long time, or the Lawrence character not being around for a long time. Obviously, you know, casting the show was such a big a big deal. I'm just curious to know. I know what my approach was to casting the show. I'm curious what your approach was to casting the show.
I had very specific types in mind, you know, like, again, this is based off of a real best friend of mine. And so my best friend is actually a dark skinned, beautiful black woman, straight hair. Like, I had a specific archetype. And I remember, you know, even in casting choices, I was very specific. I was like, I don't want to do the, oh, dark skin, light skin combination that's always in these black shows. I'm like, these are two dark skin leads because this is true to life.
Yep.
And I was very specific about that, and that, you know, casting would still send send tapes and I'd be like, no, and no shade, but I was just like,
why is
I'm
Vanessa
just not
Williams
looking here? At I'm not looking at this. And then for Lawrence, I was open. But do you remember our first casting meeting? We met with these initial, when we were interviewing casting directors. The first ones that we interviewed were like, we're thinking of, for Lawrence, like a Jay Ellis type. And I was like, he's like kind of too handsome. And I was like, nah. And we ended up not hiring those casting directors. And we went with Vicky Thomas and crew. And Jay Ellis ended up auditioning. And I was still like, he's great, but I don't know. And then that was still in my mind. But casting generally, I'm getting ahead of myself. Like, outside of Molly, I was generally open. But I wanted to have, like, real people.
Yeah.
Definitely not celebrities.
Yeah. I think we talked about that a lot, too, of, like, not wanting people to come into the show with, like, preconceived ideas.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I hated them in this,
exactly.
Or I didn't like them in this, that. And I think we also wanted to, we talked about this, too, is that we also wanted to flood the, like, sort of new Hollywood with more fresh voices and more fresh faces, because I think, like, there's a tendency with white shows like Girls where it's like, oh, well, let's kind of find new voices. And with us, it's like, let's grab rapper X, right?
Yep.
And we don't get to. And so for us, it was like we wanted to do the same thing that Spike did in terms of infusing new black talent, the same thing that I think Robert Townsend and Keenan Ivory Wayans did, infused with new black talent, and to be able to do it. So I know that was a big thing for us.
Did we talk about in advance? I feel like when Elon, who ended up playing Daniel, auditioned for Lawrence, he came from The Hustle, which was your show on Fuse before this. And I don't think I knew that at the time. But did we talk? Did you say, like, oh, I'm submitting this? I'm telling this person.
I think
to
I might have said, I have a friend of mine who was in my thing who's really good. But I think I might have said it more in passing. And I just kind of sent his thing on to Vicky.
I remember Elon was the first person I saw when he auditioned for Lawrence, where I was like, oh, oh my gosh, I could see this. He's so damn good. And, you know, we were also very clear about, like, let's not share, like, one at a time.
Our thoughts.
And so we all landed on the line at the same time. Are you about to pull out your notes?
Yeah, I have my official notes of the casting. And I'm going to read what I thought of everybody.
Yes.
And then I'm going to read Yvonne, and I'd love to hear your story, because you have a specific story about how you met, obviously, Yvonne. So for Daniel or Alon, I put a star by him. And I said, did some good things. As Lawrence, I wrote, might be a better, I think it was still Donnell in the script at the time.
Oh, word? Yes. Oh, yeah, it must have been. Yeah.
Because I wrote Donnell. I have Donnell here. So I said, might be a better Donnell, which obviously he ended up being. Mm-hmm. For Jay.
I wrote the same thing.
I wrote, really good. I underlined it. I wrote, seems natural. I could see him cleaned up and be bummy also. That's what I wrote. Okay. And I wrote, I think he left a tiny bit of comedy left on the table, but maybe that's okay.
These are expensive notes.
Dude, those are. Like, it was like quick. And then this is what I wrote for Yvonne. So I put a star and I wrote, I liked her a lot. I was like, I like the way she said bitch. I don't know what scene she was doing, but I thought the way she said bitch, because I thought the way she said bitch was good. I wrote, she's quick. She's fast. She seemed real. I could also see her be bougie. I love her turns. I can't tell if she's too big at times. She has a tick to get handsy to sell emotion.
Yeah.
But there's something here.
That's what fire. I wrote about Yvonne. Wow. Very prescient. So Yvonne, I, as an avid Facebook user, like, saw a video that she did about, like, Nigerians celebrating or claiming Obama back in, like, 2008. And I just added her as a friend. Didn't know her from Adam. And then when Awkward Black Girl came out, she hit me up on Twitter not knowing who I was and was just like, hey, I just want to say I'm a fan and blah, blah, blah. I was like, bitch, I'm a fan of you. And she was like, you know me? And so we were just Twitter friends and we kept in touch. I invited her to, like, some wine down I threw at my house and she showed up. It was very like, if she was crazy, that was a bad movie. But we just kept in touch over the internet. And when the show came out, oh no. So then I just followed her career. She would host these like fashion shows. Yep. And I remember seeing her host a fashion show. And she reminded me of Megan. She reminded me of her in like demeanor. And I was like, oh, she kind of reminds me of my best friend. And so when I started writing Insecure, I never forgot that. And I was like, oh, if whatever came down to it, I'd love for her to audition. And I told her that. And I was like, hey, girl, like, I'm going to send you this in advance. But, like, if it ever gets picked up, I think you should, you know, audition. Right. She was like, whoa, this is so random. I'm trying to get my show off the ground, first gen, but absolutely. And so the time came and I was like, and I didn't tell y'all, I was just like, I sent her the thing. I was like, hey, you should audition. There's literally no promises. I'm not the only voice in this. Right. And with y'all, I didn't want to like bias anything. And so through five rounds of auditions, she made it through. And she would call me to be like, was that good? And I was like, yeah, girl, it was really good. Maybe I'm just a little too big. and I felt like that was the extent of what I gave her. And every single time, you know, she just got better and better, and made the character hers. And I never influenced it. I never, like, y'all came to the conclusion. And of course, during the test, we had three.
Three Mollies
who auditioned, who are all phenomenal and very, very different. And it came down to chemistry.
I'm sure, and that's so funny because even the four Lawrences we took in all ended up being in the show. It's like we took in Jay, we took in Alon, we took in
Neil
Brown as who ended up playing Chad.
Even Leonard, like there was a specific line reading that he did. I can't even remember, but it was the cadence of it was like, like it was just, it was like, what? Who is this guy?
But Leonard, who ended up playing Torian. So all of them ended up having roles in the show.
Why didn't the Mollies have roles in the show?
I don't know. That's kind of on you, I guess.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
I think everybody worked out exactly. Like, I can't see. Neil was so great as Chad.
Oh, my God.
That I can't even see. And Alon. And I think on the spot, we said Alon should be Daniel
for
like
sure.
Right there at the casting.
But remember Jay auditioned for Daniel and Lawrence.
And Lawrence,
And he was really good as Daniel, too.
He was really good
as Daniel.
It was almost like, there's almost two on the nose, like him being so, but there's like a sweetness to
like,
Jay.
Yeah. And it was also like his Daniel wouldn't call you back. I'm sorry. Yeah. But whereas Alon's Daniel, you're like, oh, I can see like why he's engaged. I can see why he's whatever. He's just aloof enough, but also has depth enough to like warrant.
And there's like a quiet kind of mystery about Alon too that I think that Jay's just, he's much more social as a person. Yeah. So I think that Alon has a, is much more like, I mean, the nigga literally sometimes is in a cave somewhere. So he definitely has like, I could go away and whatever. So he feels supernatural.
Hey Prentice, who's our sponsor this week?
This segment is brought to you by Merit Beauty. I'll be honest, for many years, my skincare routine was basically just hope. Like I'd splash some water, maybe moisturize if I was feeling ambitious, and just trust and hope that I looked fine. And then someone put me on Merit Beauty, and I was like, oh, this is what I was supposed to be doing. The Great Skin Serum is the one that got me. I put it on, and my face just looked awake, hydrated, like I slept more than I actually did. And fellas, if you're listening, don't sleep on this. We deserve to have good skin too. My wife asked me what products I was using, so of course I put her on to Merit Beauty because skincare this good and this easy shouldn't be a secret. Merit is a minimalist beauty brand, elevated products, 5-minute routine, and your skin is better for it. Right now, Merit Beauty is offering our listeners their signature makeup bag with your first order at meritbeauty.com. That's M-E-R-I-T beauty.com to get your free signature makeup bag with your first order. meritbeauty.com.
Obviously, now that we have our cast, we obviously, and at this time, we obviously had a director, and I don't think the show would even remotely be what it is. I can't even imagine anybody else directing this besides Melina Matsoukas. And I don't even know, if you had to describe Melina in like one word, how would you describe Melina?
In the best way, particular. Mm. How about you?
I'd say, it's not, I guess these are two words, but I would say like a force.
No, you can't. You said, okay, force.
Force. Yeah.
Particular force. That's it. Like, she has a hyper-specific point of view. She, like, has an incredible eye.
Yeah.
She she can spot beauty in honestly anything and make things beautiful.
Yeah.
And, like, the director search was hard. Like,
it was.
Like, post-Chris, then it was, like, you know,
I think we just did a lot of meetings.
We did a lot of meetings, and it was just, you know, people. And we did a lot of meetings with non-Black people.
Yep.
You know, and that was like also
not right.
It wasn't right. Yeah. And Melina was someone who was on my radar from her music videos.
Yeah, because you had her on the list early.
Yeah, yeah. And we finally got to a point where we met with Casey, and we had met with all these directors, and he was like, "Look, clearly it's not working. If you had to take a chance on somebody, who would it be?" And I was like, Melina Matsoukas. Like, I'd love to meet with her. And of course, there were other people on the list too. And so she read the script, and she had gotten a lot of TV scripts before, she said, and nothing had really connected with her. And she came to that first meeting. Do we want to save this? I feel like we should say this from when she's here.
No, we should say it now. We could just re-bring it back up.
When we first... This was like even before Zoom was popular. We had to have a Skype meeting because I think
she might have been in New York. Yeah,
she came onto the meeting like,
and we had also gone to bat for her.
Yes, like to meet with her. Like this was a big deal. And when she came on the meeting, it was like choppy. She wasn't prepared.
She wasn't prepared at
everybody
all.
Else had like presentations and shit, and it was like she had shown up to be like, "Hey, girl," and I knew I was like, "I know you have more than this."
Yeah.
And it was like, Ashley was repping her at the time, Ashley Holland, who we just mentioned. And I hit up Ashley like, "Girl, what the fuck? Why you didn't?"
Because she almost kind of came in like, "I mean, you know, I'm Black. So I should get it." And we was like, you know, I'm looking at her like, "What the fuck is she doing?" Like, because she was like, "Girl, we are putting our neck out here for you. We are in mixed company."
Yes. Correct.
She came in so unprepared.
Yes. And then she felt it on the other end. So Ashley, I was like, "Get your motherfucking girl together." And then, you know, we had a second meeting, and that's when she came with the deck, and it was just like a breath of fresh air. She, without, I don't even think I said in the pilot that Molly was an AKA, but she was like, "Molly gives me maybe AKA vibes." And I was like,
"Oh
my God."
Yeah, she did. Yep.
And just the way that she wanted to, like, her visual ideas for the show, it was very clear that there was going to be, like, this would be like nothing else we had seen on television, and specifically for these women, you know, for Black stories.
And I think the way that Melina, obviously, she brought, I think, so much, I think scared a lot of people early on, like this cinematic look.
Yeah.
Because a lot of half-hour shows, even specifically on HBO, are pretty bright, like Veep, Silicon Valley, Curb. So it's a lot of like, even though they're, you know, shot single camera, they still feel have a sitcom feel to them. And we were doing something so different. We were playing with lighting and playing with color and playing with mood, all because of Melina, you know what I mean? And her vision to be able to do that. And I think the way, again, how she would light locations, how she would do all that, it was just so like, wow, this is really incredible.
And she kind of founded or toured the Insecure shot, the infamous Insecure shot, where
it was like on her board. It was actually on her board, I think. I think it was on her board, but she was like, I want to play with framing. Like, people are over here in the frame and we're kind of playing with like negative space.
And so that became something that was a frame that was authentic to our show that I've seen in other shits. Don't think I didn't see you. Don't think I haven't seen you.
Shot stealing ass niggas.
Okay. Trying to steal our license shit, lighting. But yeah, she was so innovative in that, and the care that she put into like every frame on the show was just like, it was eye opening.
Yeah. I knew we were gonna be a good team. There was one day and we were scouting locations. I don't know if you remember this.
Shout out Denise too.
Who was so essential to Denise Davis, going to locations on Sundays, trying to find stuff. Where we were scouting Inglewood High School.
Oh.
And we, cause that's where we first shot that We Got Y'all Kids.
Yeah.
And I remember Melina's like, this totally summed up, I think, Three the Hard Way, which is what we called ourselves, was Melina's like, has all these questions about the location. I'm kind of like reading the script, kind of saying like, how would this pan out? And I remember looking over and you and Denise are double dutching with no rope. And I remember being like, oh, this is gonna be fun. Do you remember that?
Yes, I absolutely remember that. That's so funny. I also remember like some of the framed pictures, because there were some times I couldn't join you on the scout and Denise would send me pictures that either Melina took or that she took a specific frames, and like you would be in it and she would have, and I was like, look at these beautiful Black people working on this show. This is actually really happening. It's been so many years and it's finally happening, and I was just overjoyed. Yeah. And we're scouting in my fucking neighborhood down the street, you know, like that was.
Well, talk about that too. Talk about, because I think like location is so important in the show, right? And at a certain point, we had a line producer that was like, we could just kind of fake Culver City for all of this. And that was never our intention, obviously. But talk about just sort of like why location sort of felt super important, like this LA to be seen on screen.
Well, like you mentioned, we're both from View Park, South LA. I was living in Inglewood at the time. And, you know, my grandparents lived in Inglewood. Like, I grew up with a specific perception of Inglewood that I felt like wasn't portrayed on the television screen. And so even living there, I was just like, this is beautiful. There are Black people here. There's so much potential here too. And I want to showcase like how it makes me feel.
Yeah.
And it's hyper important to me to also showcase what it is right now, you know, and like find the beauty in that. And hopefully I maybe highlight the Black businesses that exist here and make this a destination. And I meant make this a destination for us. I didn't know that
you were gonna bring all these
aid,
white people.
Yes, we would aid to the gentrification of Inglewood. But like, that was a fight, you know.
Yeah.
And so like, you also shared that vision clearly. And Melina didn't know much about Inglewood, and so she was also essential to making sure that area felt beautiful. Yep. That was special. And also, they're just, you know, since we always talked about this in interviews, but like Boys in the Hood, Menace Society, like all these shows that were set in LA only showcased the kind of hood, gritty, violent nature of it, as opposed to like the up and coming Black.
Now, obviously, now we have Melina, we have our cast, now we're filming the pilot. So I remember the first couple of days, it was like Molly scenes. We were filming early on. Mm-hmm. What was your, when you had the first, like, was your first scene Mercado?
My first scene was in the car with Molly. Like, so we shot all the law scenes.
In front of her apartment.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
So what were you, so what was your feeling and vibe? First day, scene. And that's a big Issa Molly, I mean, because there's comedy. We hadn't shot the Mavericks flat part, so there's nothing to kind of anchor, obviously, yet. So what was your first thought as you're like gearing up for the first day, for the first shot of the show ever?
I was super excited just seeing, like, I remember the law firm, the glass windows, and like us dressing up that set and feeling like great. Maya Erskine was like phenomenal.
She was super fun. Shout out to Maya Erskine. She's a big star now.
Yes, extremely big star. hilarious.
Super hilarious.
With her, like, the subtle things that she does. Yep. And I remember just feeling like, oh, Molly and her are so great. Molly and Diane. And then being like, oh, shit, I got to shoot tonight. This is crazy. But ready. And I think, was the car scene one of our audition scenes at all?
What do you mean audition?
Audition, sorry. Was that one of our tests?
It was.
So we've done it so many times by then. Like, I felt like, oh, I know what I want to add. Like, I know exactly what this scene is. This feels like literally it's written as an argument that I would have with my friend. And so I felt like it was small enough to feel like, okay, I know what this is. It was more the rest of the week. I think I was really scared about.
Yeah, what scene scared you?
The Mercado scene, for sure.
Why is that?
Because it was supposed to also be an emotional heart of the show. And and that kind of changed a bit, but it was supposed to feel like, oh, Molly and Issa together. And it was the first broken pussy line. It was supposed to be funny, and also you're supposed to feel for Molly that she's been, like, actually trying.
Yeah.
No one wants her. And so I was like, I wonder if that's going to read, because that matters.
I remember I had two moments that I was like, these are like my favorite moments. My first favorite moment was that scene in the car when you guys are like, you know, like you're dropping her off and she's mad. For me, it was funny because it felt like, okay, this is going to be the show. Because it was the first time we shot you guys together, right? I think it was the first time.
Yeah.
And so I think what was so, it was also the first time I felt like, oh, my job as a showrunner can kind of also begin. Like, I can kind of show what, like, my... Because on a scale, it's like Melina's kind of driving it. Obviously, we're giving our opinions. Obviously, we're giving our opinions on casting. But there's a lot of things in that mix. But when you're on the set and now you're fully engaged as an actor, Melina's doing this, and I'm here to, like, now... I feel now I can really kind of contribute and take kind of things I've learned and doing that. And I remember when I pitched the child locks and she came out the car. And I remember being like, oh, this is going to be, I remember thinking that moment, oh, this is going to be a funny show.
Bitch, I know you did not just respond to that motherfucking text message.
I didn't.
You're lying. Did you just send a text message?
I swear on my brother's life and my life, I did not send a text. Okay, now it's technically set, but Daniel,
you know what? Fuck you. And if you fuck Daniel, you're as much of a dumb bitch as I am. Fucking asshole. Motherfucker, open the door.
My other favorite scene that I love to talk to you about the origin of it was the mirror lifting scene.
Because
we were just throwing so many odds about, like, you want this 90 or not, pussy parmesan,
pussy parmesan came from, like, a crew member. Was that?
I thought that was Melina, because I thought Melina was the one. She was like, I finally got a line in.
Pussy Parmesan was her?
I thought she was Pussy Parmesan.
I just remember, at one point, like, there was scripted stuff.
Yeah.
There was stuff that I improv'd, and then we opened it up, and people were just throwing shit out. Like,
yeah, Pussy Parmesan could have been, like, a grip.
Pussy Pop Pie might have been
Pussy Pop Pie, I think, was Melina. Pussy Pop Pie was Melina.
Yes. Okay, Pussy Pop Pie was Melina.
Was you want this 90 or not in the script, or was that an improv from you?
I think that was an improv from me. Okay. I know that a lot of the aggressive nanny, I'll call her. What was it? Militant nanny, black lipstick girl.
Uh-huh.
That was like, I was in my back. I was like, one thing I can do. You said, do you know Beck? Like, that was.
Yeah, that was. I was like, because you were like the white girl. Like, do you know Beck? No, it's so funny. When I rewatched that as we were about to make this, I also saw that you do a lifted character with a British accent. Which I'm like, oh, God. Kelly, like you were doing the British accent.
Oh,
we were like, oh, dad, yo.
Such a bad British accent.
Yeah, I can't do accents, though. It's horrible. But I was like, oh, she was doing like.
Oh, my God, that's true.
Now, is that a thing that women do? Is that a thing, like where'd that come from? Because I was like, oh, is this a thing, like, women do, like, put on different, like, lipsticks and, like.
That's so funny because that became something. Like, that was something that I just, like, wrote as, like, myself. You know, like, if I were to put on lipstick, I would have these different identities and try them out. Because that wasn't really a thing for me. I was like, oh, purple lipstick. Why would I wear this? I would become this. And then the fact that became something that other women related to was news to me.
Yep.
But you do try on different personalities, like in running into your, like, it was more about that and running into this person that I had orchestrated a run-in with, like, how was I going to show up?
Yeah.
How would I make this person kind of fall in love with me? And imagining those scenarios, that's definitely something that I've done. And I think that was the crux of it. But the lipstick part of it and the way that it was shot, obviously, like, she's fucking crazy.
Yeah, no, she's crazy.
She's absolutely crazy and delusional. But it was just like, you know, that was all that birthed kind of the mirror moment.
Yeah,
we had the mirror raps, but the mirror moment itself became
as a character.
Its own thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was because I was like, what's the guy version of this? And I was like, I think what dudes do is like lay out a fit, and dudes either say like, they don't know, I'm about to kill them, or these hoes not ready. Like whatever nigga, like, oh, these hoes not ready. That's what niggas say.
Do y'all like do push-ups and stuff before you like go out?
I think I did in my younger days, maybe, but I don't know if that's a thing that like, I think it's mostly you lay out the fit and you go like, I'm about to kill these niggas.
Okay.
These niggas ain't up on it. Like niggas love other niggas that ain't up on shit.
I know, always pointing it out. Like, well, what? Who's up on it then? What's the bar?
So, you know, one of the things obviously is like, you know, we shoot our show, we edit it. I'm curious, like, and obviously it comes out. Our first airing of the show was at Essence Fest.
Yes.
So this is the first time we're showing it in front of a public audience. Again, before. Which was a fight. What was your thoughts as we were sitting in that room in Essence Fest being like, okay, some people are really about to watch this show?
I think about that moment a lot because, like I said, to air at Essence was already a fight for multicultural marketing.
Yep.
They had never, or marketing in general, but we had an amazing multicultural marketing.
Yeah, they were great.
Shout out to Lucinda at the time. And I was like, I really want to air at Essence because this is like, that's our demographic.
Yep,
it's black women.
Yep.
And they were like, that's too early. Like the show comes out.
It's like October.
October.
Yeah.
That's in July. Like, if there's bad press about it, you're tanking your own show. And I was like, but we're going to do, like, a premiere. I just want to preview it there. So we end up doing it, and, like, I remember, I brought my whole friends out. There was, like, I want to say, Jadena was out there. Like, all these other people.
He was out there, yeah.
We're watching. It was a small screening room, and I was nervous, but I was also proud of like what we had done.
Yeah.
I was like, even if I don't like this shit, I know what it is. and so the crowd went crazy.
They went crazy.
I know. I was like, and still even in my mind, I was like, then it was the reverse. I was like, well, these niggas my friends. They don't count. Like, you know, I know mostly like that don't count. But it felt special, and even people coming up to us afterwards and being like, yo. Like, y'all are out of here. It still didn't register until, like, it was really on TV.
Yeah.
And then the reactions. How did you feel?
I felt super excited and also super nervous. And I think because it's like, well, here we go.
Yeah.
Because we had gambled and bet a lot. You know what I mean? All three of us. And so I knew, like, the broken pussy scene got such a great laugh. I mean, the cold open of you with the kids that we got y'all and Denise, shout out to Tiana. Just like that scene got so many laughs from the beginning that I was like, okay.
Oh, people are bought in.
Yeah, people are bought in. And then so many great moments of the broken pussy thing working, all the Mercado stuff working.
The
We Got Y'all stuff, all the lipstick stuff. And so at that point, it felt, oh man, people
like
are going to be,
it.
Yeah, like they get it. I think one of the things I'd be curious to ask you about is the things that people either we didn't love or the things people didn't love. Like, what do you feel we got right? Yes, like, what do you feel we got right, and what do you feel we got wrong?
It's so funny because there were so many things born out of that pilot that became signatures throughout the series. One was, like, our cold opens kind of ending abruptly or on moments that were, like, unfinished or uncertain.
Yeah.
And that was something we liked, and I feel like that's something that Melina might have done on her own, or maybe we crafted in the pilot. I don't remember.
I think because we cut that scene off and we were just like, oh, this is just kind of fun to go off in the middle of stuff.
Bitch, you still mad?
Bitch, you still tripping?
My girlfriend!
You don't get off of me.
Where is your bag? Because I only see one.
It's not under your big ass wrap.
Our incredible editor, who was our pilot editor and then, you know, stayed with us throughout the show, directed an episode in the fourth season. He was so great with music and Keir and Melina, like No Small Talk by Carrie Foe. Like, that also set the tone of just like, oh, our opening credits are about to be bumping.
Yep. Well, this was fun.
Yeah, I felt like we covered a lot of things. Again, if you guys have any questions, we may
Please email us and text us or tweet us or whatever.
Thank y'all for tuning in to Block Party, an Insecure podcast. We have so much more in store for you, and you know we want to hear from you. So to submit questions, follow Hooray Media on Instagram, and make sure to subscribe to Hooray's YouTube for more exclusive content. Till then, we'll see you at the party next week.